is a warmth in this congregation, a simple friendliness that shines through the fumblings and failures, a love that makes the ragged edges smooth. I have always wanted to believe, really believe, that our mistakes are not the most important parts of us. I have always wanted to believe that kindness and compassion matter more than anything. And I sense that that is true here in this congregation, in this place. We are a community that through our practice brings kindness, compassion, and love into the world. Your financial support, your gifts of time support that vision. We will now support the work through our morning offering. I'd like to thank you for your gifts. There are those, the checks and cash given to support our ministry here. And then there are other gifts. Your gift of laughter, for one. It can be a little daunting to stand up in a pulpit and lead worship each Sunday and come up with words that somehow seem wise. There are a lot of details to keep straight. And there are mistakes made. And I know deep in my heart there is a love and a forbearance here. You do not ask me to be perfect. And because of this, I know that you do not ask each other to be perfect. We ask only that each other of us try to do our best. And for that, I am thankful. So trust. It's a hard thing. It's hard to trust when you've had an experience of trust being broken. And haven't we all had that experience of trust being broken? It is especially hard to trust if you are a survivor of trauma. Many of us are survivors of trauma. Some of us have repaired our ability to trust, and some of us are still in the process of repairing it. Because surviving trauma is an ongoing process. It means learning to trust again and again. Trust is hard when everything seems to be changing around you. How can you trust if the rules keep changing? And yet trust is critical to us simply living our lives. Now you might believe that you are a skeptic, and you might believe the worst about people, and still, every day, you trust. If I did not trust that gravity existed, I would not get out of bed. Or perhaps I would get out of bed involuntarily because I float to the ceiling. A number of years ago, I had a bout with vertigo, extreme dizziness, and it was scary because I really could not stand up. My legs worked, but every time I stood up, I would fall over. Fortunately, it was a short-lived experience of not trusting gravity, or at least not trusting my perception of gravity. It was the strangest thing. I mean, I could see what was up and I could see what was down, but I could not get my body to cooperate. Brené Brown, in her recent book, Dare to Lead, has a chapter entitled Braving Trust. She is an American research professor at the Graduate College of Social Work at the University of Houston. And she has spent the past two decades studying courage, vulnerability, shame, and empathy. And if you are intrigued by this sermon, I would encourage you to read that book, Daring to Lead, especially the chapter Braving Trust. Now, she is a researcher after all, and so she starts with defining her terms. Trust, it's a big word. What does it mean? And she chose to cite Charles Feltman, who said, "Trust is choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. Trust is choosing to make something important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. And distrust is what I have shared with you that is important to me is not safe with you." And here is why we can understand trust to be scary. Because you or I cannot trust without vulnerability. And that means there is always a risk to trust. Now, I know this might seem so obvious as to be trite, but I think it's really important to lift up. Trust, to really happen, requires that there be some level of intimacy. And we might avoid real trust by creating something like fake intimacy. Brené Brown mentions that sometimes gossiping is like that. Now, she's from Texas, and she has just the slightest Southern accent. So you have to imagine this phrase with just the slightest Southern accent. If you don't have anything good to say, come sit next to me. Sometimes having a shared enemy can make us feel like we are connected to a person. It can make us seem like we are on the same side and working together, but it is false. We are really bound together in our dislike or disrespect of the same person. We can see how in politics these days, this is playing out in our country now. There are people that will foment anxiety and scapegoating so that a group can be bound together in its shared hate for someone or some group or some issue. Now, Dr. Brown, because she is an excellent storyteller and tries to convey her message in a way that is memorable, came up with the acronym BRAVING, B-R-A-V-I-N-G, so that it might be easier for us to remember the ideas that she is trying to convey to us. B, boundaries. You respect my boundaries, and when you are not clear about what's okay and not okay, you ask. And you're willing to say no. Now, in my life, I end up talking about boundaries a lot. In part, that's because about once or twice a year, I do a professional boundary training for clergy. And also because I sit on the Ministerial Fellowship Committee, where we talk with possible new ministers about their professional boundaries. We ministers these days spend a lot of time talking about our professional boundaries, because we know that honoring boundaries and not breaking boundaries is essential to building trust with a person or a congregation. And we know too many instances where clergy broke that trust. And it takes years of hard work, as this congregation knows, to regain that trust. Setting boundaries is the process of defining where I stop and where you begin. What is my business? And what is your business? And the boundaries can shift over time. What was my business with my daughter, who is 36, was radically different when she was 2 than now. And it's tough because boundaries are not rigid. There is an old adage that good fences make good neighbors, but good fences need good gates. If a boundary is so rigid, and if you're not getting the political message here, wake up. If a boundary is so rigid that no one can ever cross it, then it's not a boundary, it's a wall. Walls keep people out. Boundaries allow folks to know when is the right time to come in and when is the right time to stay out. R, reliability. You do what you say you will do. At work, this means staying aware of your competencies and limitations so you don't overpromise and are able to deliver on commitments and balancing competing priorities. Now, reliability doesn't mean that you can't ever fail, but it does mean that over time, you are more likely to follow through on what you say. I love working with people whose yes really means yes, and their no really means no. It makes it easy to trust that they will do what they say, or they won't do what they say they won't do. A, accountability. You own your mistakes, you apologize, and you make amends. There is this phrase, being thrown under the bus. I did a little bit of research. It doesn't seem to have appeared in our culture until the late 80s or early 90s. So if someone actively blames you for their mistake so that they look good and you do not, that is being thrown under the bus. They are not owning their own mistakes. But when someone makes a mistake, owns it, apologizes for it, and then makes amends, you learn that they are not out to destroy you, but rather they are accountable, and in fact, they value the relationship that you have. V, vault. Now, in almost any acronym, one of the letters is more of a stretch than the others. And I think V here is that letter because we don't really often talk about people behaving like a vault. But Dr. Brown's meaning here is you don't share information or experiences that are not yours to share. I need to know that my confidences are kept and that you're not going to be sharing with me any information about other people that should be confidential. If I try to build a relationship with you by gossiping about other people to you, I do draw you into my inner circle, but I also have shown you that I probably will also gossip about you. How likely are you to trust me with sharing your information? I, integrity. You choose courage over comfort. You choose what is right over what is fun or fast or easy, and you choose to practice your values rather than simply professing them. Now, it's not always easy to choose practicing our values rather than simply professing them. And this is where our UU faith is hard. We don't have a creed that can be affirmed like some checkbox. Yes, so you believe the creed. Yep, you're one of us. You don't really have to interrogate that too deeply. Instead, we have these seven principles that we work at that we hope guide our actions each day. We are a faith that says we are about living out our values every day, even if it's hard. What you value and how you live out those values is way more important than what you believe or what your personal creed is. N, non-judgment. I can ask for what I need, and you can ask for what you need, and we can talk about it and how we feel without judgment. We can ask each other for help without judgment. Dr. Brown goes on to say that actually being able to ask for help is one of the things that allows people to trust us. When they know that we can be vulnerable enough to ask for help. Now, non-judgment does not mean that you have no opinions or that anyone can say anything or do anything around you. Remember, if you're working at building trust, you also have boundaries and integrity. Non-judgment means asking for what I need or giving to folks what they need without attaching a whole lot of baggage to it. If I never let you forget that time I did a favor for you, it's not much of a favor, is it? G, generosity. You extend the most generous interpretation possible to the intentions or words or actions of others. Of all of them, I think this is my favorite and probably the one I struggle with the most. If I am really tired or busy or sick or just not at my best, and I make a mistake like forgetting that I have an appointment with one of you, and then you jump to the conclusion that I have it out for you and I am the worst person in the world, oh, that's hard. But if I know the other person tends to react from a place of the best defense is a good offense, then it's much harder for me or anyone really to contact them and say, hey, I screwed up, I missed our appointment. But when I make that contact and I hear one of you say, well, I was wondering what was up. I know you value our relationship. I know you're usually pretty reliable. You okay? How's it going? That is a gift. I can relax, and the two of us can make amends. She also says, Dr. Brown says, that while trust is inherently relational and most pronounced in practice with other people, the foundation of trust with others is really based on our ability to trust ourselves. So all those letters that I gave you don't just apply to the person you're thinking about in your head right now. They also apply to how you treat yourself. Building trust with others can be done within the context of a relationship. You can look at these things: boundaries, reliability, accountability, vault, integrity, non-judgment, generosity. But I have a limited amount of power to make somebody else change. If my best friend is not reliable about showing up when we agree to meet for coffee, there may be very little I can do about that. But I do have a lot of impact over trusting myself, helping myself become worthy of my own trust. So what can you do for yourself to make yourself be able to trust more? What would quiet that negative voice in your head? Because almost all of us have that negative voice. How can you strengthen your boundaries? What would need to change for you to be more reliable? How can you be accountable and less defensive? What would you need to change so that you could honor the confidences that someone shares with you? How can you live your values, lower your judginess, increase your generosity? And you might be fine in the reliability area, but you might need more work in the non-judgment area. We can't always be rock stars in all of these areas all at once. Being in community with one another is important to building trust with ourselves and building trust with others. It's hard to be accountable all by ourselves. Or perhaps I should just speak for myself here. It's hard for me to be accountable when it's just me. If I make a promise to myself that I am going to drink 8 glasses of water a day because I know that is healthier, and I don't do it, and nobody knows about that promise I've made, it's really easy for me to rationalize. Well, you know, today I was very busy, and it was much more important for me to do whatever. Or I spent so much time in my car today, I just couldn't get the 8 glasses of water in. But if I tell my husband and my kids I'm going to drink 8 glasses of water, and suddenly at dinner my kid says, "Where's your water glass?" Now I'm accountable. If I tell my kid that I'm going to spend some time with them and I don't do it, I have their face to look at. It makes me just a little bit more accountable. It is just a truth about us humans that for most of us, we are better behaved in community than we are alone. That's what it means to be a social animal. Our congregation is so much more than a social club, so much more than a UU study group. It is a place where we get to bring all of ourselves, the good, the bad, the ugly, the amazing. We get to bring all the warts and all the beauty. We all do that. And we gather here, and we make friends, and we build relationships, and we make mistakes, and we make amends. And in that, we help one another. Each and every day, we practice and practice and practice at being more trustable and more trusting. In that, there is healing and love and an amazing hope for the future. In a world without end, may this be so.